the Senate Education and General Government Committee. It is a beautiful day, at least here in Salem. Senator Morse tells me it's foggy down in Albany. So sorry about that down there. It will get sunny today. Please turn off all your cell phones, PDAs, electronic devices. We don't allow those to go off in here. We have a penalty for that if you do. We don't throw you in jail. We just have you donate money to the Common School Fund. If you're here to sign up, over there on the against the wall is where you do that. And we're jumping around on the agenda today just simply because of people's availability. The first four bills, we will proceed with all the public hearing bills, and then we'll jump right into where we need to be on Senate Bill 382 will be the first work session bill we'll do. Okay, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 247. Ms. Richardson, please tell us what's going on here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 247 establishes an Oregon Scholars Pilot Program at Klamath Community College to reimburse qualified investors who pay for students' tuition. It requires the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to transfer unused Oregon Opportunity Grant funds to the community college for the program. Directs the State Board of Education to expand the Access and Affordability Work Group. Directs this working group to assist with the implementation and make recommendations for statewide expansion of the pilot program. Declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means as well as a Dash 1 amendment. Shall I
give a quick overview of the Dash 1?
Sure. The Dash 1 amendments appropriate monies. It specifies participation in the program is voluntary. It specifies that participating students must apply to Klamath Community College and complete an academic plan at either the community college or the Oregon Institute of Technology. It authorizes the community college to determine student qualifications and investors to be reimbursed, requires the community college to inform students and investors of qualifying programs and courses, and it specifies student eligibility requirements.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Fred Smith from Klamath Falls has graced us with his wonderful present. Did you drive up this morning, Dr. Smith?
No, I came in last night.
Okay, so you can't tell us if it's sunny or snowy. It was snowing in Salt Lake City this morning.
It was snowing over the pass yesterday as well, so
all right,
pretty good snow coming over the top. Senator Walker, members of the Senate Ed Committee, for the record, my name is Fred Smith. I am the college president at Klamath Community College, and the materials that I'm giving you today are basically about this pilot program. Now, the big change that I'm requesting of this is that basically we are not requesting any funds for this. My community college board has basically allowed me to run this program as a pilot with the funds from my institution. Now, you have before you a set
I saw some hearts just sort of skip a beat back there in relief.
Oh, my board's going to take care of this. So this is not money. We're not talking money. We're talking a concept today, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll go from there. Before you is a document, and it has a number of pages, and I would have you look first at the card that's at the top. And what I've done with the card is I've made you all honorary Klamath scholars. So you're all honorary members of this program.
Ooh, my picture looks better.
And as you walk down through the first page, what you'll see is what we have done, or what we are in the process of doing, excuse me. What we have done is we went out to all the school districts in our community college district, and we said, beginning with the class of 2010, if they can graduate with their high school class and graduate with a one-year certificate from our institution, we will either cut them a check for $500 cash that they can take, they can celebrate for their senior party, whatever they want to do, or they can take it to the University of Oregon, wherever they'd like to go. We don't care. Or we will give them a scholarship to continue their education at our institution for one more term that's worth a little over $1,100. Now, to do that, what we are doing is we are making a completely voluntary program. All right, we are forcing no one to do this. What we are doing is what we have found out is in Klamath County, better than two-thirds of the students who go to the county school district are eligible for free and reduced lunches. More than 60% of the city schools students are. What we have found out is we need to give our students hope, and this is a beginning for us to give hope. What we're trying to tell our students is that if you will work hard, we will take tuition off the table. So I want to walk you through Klamath Community College's program as we see it right now.
Okay.
The first thing we need to do, as for all community college students, is you have to prove that there's an ability to benefit. We cannot waste anybody's time. And so everybody who takes a placement examination comes in, and they have to prove that they can benefit from the instruction. The second thing is my institution doesn't have the ability to handle international students, so they must be residents of America and residents of our district, so we have to do that. That's just because my institution doesn't have that. And they must be enrolled in one of the high schools in my district, and I don't care if it's a private, I don't care if it's a public, it's immaterial to me. What we're trying to do is we're offering an incentive for performance. All right, we don't care if mommy made $3,000 or $300,000. This is an incentive. This is not financial aid. Some other things you need to understand about my district is my board is really a good board, and they've already done some good things. For the students in Klamath County, if you're a high school student in a Klamath County high school, and I say county as in my district, and you can test into Math 111 and Writing 121, we will give you your tuition. We'll just give it to you. If you perform that well, we want to save students money and get them going. The second thing is if we have students who are interested in technical degrees and professional technical programs but may not have the really good academic skills, we will let them take those classes if they will agree to take the requisite reading, writing, and mathematics classes to bring those skills up. We will give the professional technical class for free to these students if they will take the requisite other skill classes. So we already are doing some great things for our students. But what we'd like to do is we'd like to have students do better, and we'd like to have more students do some things, and we're gonna add a little bit of risk to the pot. So all these students who are in this program, at the very end, you have a card. All of you have the senior card, with the exception of Senator Walker, and you've all been assigned a random high school in my district, except for Senator Walker. We put her in the juvenile detention center for grins and giggles. And so,
uh-oh, I hate that growing up. Thank you.
We thought it'd be funny. But one of the things that we're going to have these students do is we're going to give them all this card, and because they need to know what's expected of them, because at the end, to get this stipend, they're going to have to prove that they need no remediation. All right, they are going to hit a college and need no remediation. They're going to also prove that they can do collegiate work, because we can give them a national exam for juniors. And so we're asking them to show strength in either reading, writing, mathematics, or critical thinking at a college junior level. So what we're going to do is we're going to prove not only are these students leaving high school with requisite high school skills, but they're arriving on campus with no remediation and proof that they are legitimate college students. So to get the money and the scholarship, they're going to have to do these things. All right. Where did all this come from? Are we just crazy? Are we nuts? Whatever. All right. All of you have been hearing the stories about the raises of tuition. Our tuition went from $36 to $60 in the span of about 3 years. And when we were doing this, we knew we were killing access. And we knew we were going to hurt access for our students. And we knew we had to figure out a way to take tuition off the table for a lot of our students. The way we figured we could do this was to do it as an incentive. And so with this program, basically, if the student can perform, they're not going to have a tuition bill because my board has two different scholarships already. But for those who don't meet the scholarship, there will be other sponsors that will have these students. All right? I already have business folks right now who are looking to cherry pick. They want to go into the high schools and say, hey, look, you know, you don't have really very good skills, but I'll cover the tuition. And so now we have a business person who now has an interest in a student, because they know if the student fulfills all the necessary deeds for the scholarship, the business will get their tuition back. We're going to refund the tuition back. So people, will be sponsoring, we're hoping that people will be sponsoring students and helping them provide other needed things, support and help to get them through the program. I would like to see us have some groups take on students. We have the tribe in my district. I'm hoping that the tribes will take some of the students and say, look, we'll cover the tuition, we'll support the students, and then when we get them through your system, you can write us the check back, which we will gladly do because we all win in this system. All right. What we are trying to do is just provide a different way to entice students to finish. Now, when you talk about an incentive system like we're doing with this, things can get really, really interesting really, really quickly. And so with that, I want to walk you through the rest of the documents that I gave you. And so I'll take you to the first page where it says the 1% solution. And this is craziness in my own mind. And understand that I speak to you as probably the only community college president with a certified brain injury. But if we were to do this across the state, how much money would it take to incentivize all of higher ed? All right, if you sit down and do the math, you can do it on about 1% of everything that we spend. So we could set up a series of incentives, but I'm not asking for that. I'm just playing in my mind how these things could work out.
Okay.
And this is a
Dr. Smith, can you, I hope you don't plan on going through
every single page. No. I'm going to go very, very quickly.
Okay.
I'm going very quickly. I realize you gave me 20 minutes, so I'm going as quickly as I can.
Okay.
But that's, the first document has to deal with that and some of the math and some of the background for that.
Okay.
The second document is I was presenting this to my colleagues, and again, more detail on if this were to be a state plan and go from there. So just my thoughts on what we were trying to do with this. The third document might be of interest to you, and I want to hit you with it very, very quickly, and it's the document that starts at the top of the page. It says Climate Scholars Incentive Program, Part 1, Pulling High School Students Through One-Year Certificates. Now, this is what my board got, and this is what my board adopted to allow me to act on. And this will give you some of the assumptions in Klamath County, all right, and what we're working with. But what I call your attention to is the back page, or not the very back page, but the back page with typing on it, and understand that what I'd like to do in my district is make this part of a system. And this is only the first part. Let's talk about getting high school students through community colleges. Then let's talk about getting students through, GED students through the community college with an incentive. Then how can we use an incentive to have the workforce improved? How can we incentivize employers so that they'll want to get their employees degrees and certificates? You know, that's the next step. Then how do we do this for employers to have them want to get their students to get bachelor's degrees or employees to get bachelor's degrees to help them with their businesses? And then, you know, the last two parts is, you know, if we're using incentives, what we're doing is we're paying for performance. So what we're doing is we're making the government, we're making ourselves responsible to our citizens because we're paying for what we're getting. And last but not least is a personal favorite of mine because we have a great deal of veterans in Klamath County. Is how do we use an incentive system in education to help our veterans who are returning back? How do we get them to bring them back into the communities that they came from? And so those are some of the materials. The last materials are some legal documents I gave you, and then the final document is how we plan to roll it out at Klamath Community College. I have a tendency to give people much, much more detail than they need, but that allows them to ask me some questions from here and there. So with that, I'll open myself up for any types of questions that you'd like to have. But
okay.
Remember, I'm not here today asking for money. I need some help.
Dr. Smith, I really appreciate the work. You and I have talked about this and worked on this all interim. And it's a little scary for some folks because it's new, it's never been tried, and it's sometimes giving money away, they see. But what I saw about it is that you're a creative thinker. I appreciate the board is going along with your creative thinking, and you're trying to do something for students to help more students get into college and be successful. And so I'm hopeful that this program works really well for you in the interim, and we come back next session and have a more in-depth discussion about applying it to other schools. But I think this is the best way to go, is to try it in your own school district, and then we go from there. But I'm really impressed with the thinking on this. And, you know, you may find there are some bumps and you want to put some more parameters around it, but I like that you're creative about it. And I appreciate that I'm in the juvenile detention facility. I do like that. I do have a sense of humor. Any questions from the committee? Okay, I would encourage you all, when you have some time, just to read through this proposal, because we'll be talking about it in the interim. If I'm graced with the chair of this committee in the interim and you're on it, then we'll probably have a conversation and check in with Dr. Smith as this moves along.
Just one quick question.
Yeah.
Does this require a statute to do this?
That's part of the question, sir, because I'm new to this, and I'm not sure it needs a statute. This is one of those where if we set the incentive here, and then align how that the students can achieve the incentive, then what we do is we allow the market to drive the changes. And when we're talking about the first bill that I had here, is okay, if we have an incentive that says that if a student can complete their 2-year degree a year out of high school, the state will reimburse all of their tuition to whoever backs them. Okay, then basically, if you put that out on the street, then you don't need to tell me what to do, because if I don't do it, my patrons are going to kill me. All right, the market is going to drive me to make me provide that service. So I'm not quite sure. The incentive may have to be in statute and the funding, but the rest of the details, I highly doubt that, sir.
Thank you.
I think they have legal counsel that is going to look at that.
Yeah, this is one of those where the biggest help I need right now, and I was talking to Representative Jarrett this morning, is as much as I'd like to tell you all that Klamath Falls is the fountain of all knowledge, I don't believe that.
It's close, though.
there are some things in this, there are some legal things that this is going to create. You know, if we have an employer sponsor a youth, and so he writes the check to the college for this youth, when the student finishes and we write the business back a check because of the tuition they paid, does the business now have a tax problem? And the last thing we want to do is create an incentive that creates a tax problem for businessmen. And those are the kinds of knowledges that I need help with. I have my instructors on campus, and I have a CPA who teaches business for us, and she's like, well, we can get you through this. And I go, you're a very nice person, but I need a little more help. I need help from the legislature on that one. But those are the kinds of questions that I don't have answers for, and I may get spanked in the next few years over this as we learn in Klamath. But by using an incentive, you know, and an incentive is only paid after the fact. It's paid when it's done. The risk is incurred by the student or by the student sponsor, and so the reward is when the task is completed. You know, if we had workforce programs, and I'm going to pick on workforce because I'm a vo-tech guy by heart. If we take, like, unemployment insurance funds, and we say, okay, we're only going to pay these out when the employee has finished their training and is successful, then we've put the onus on finishing and being successful on the person. It's a different way of looking at things. And so I just come here, and we're gonna run this little experiment, and hopefully we'll succeed for you.
Okay. Dr. Smith, I would just encourage your college board to check in with where your funds come from to make sure everything's all okay.
That I've done.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Then yeah. I think we're good to go, and I look forward to getting a status report in the interim.
I thank you for your time, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks so much. I'll close a public hearing on Senate Bill 247, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 967. Ms. Richardson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 967 abolishes the Joint Legislative Committees on Water Policy, Audits, Transportation, Trade and Economic Development, Land Use, and the Oregon Plan. It repeals statutes related to those Joint Legislative Committees. There's a Dash 1 amendment before us as well that makes all of those changes except that it does not abolish the Legislative Committee on Audits, since that appears to be quite an active committee.
Okay, we have Mr. Hendricks from Legislative Council.
Just got a little carried away with obliterating
I
things.
I would say that would be a good catch, Madam Chair.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Legislative Council's office. Committee Administrator did a good job on explaining what the bill does. These are all committees that were created by statute at one time or another, but that have become inactive. Our office has always advised members that previous legislatures cannot tell the current legislature what kind of committees they have to have. The Constitution says that as you come in every time for a new session, you have the ability to adopt your own rules and establish such committees as you want. Consequently, we have any number of committees on the books that have not been had members appointed to them for a very long time. And part of the problem with that is if you look through the bill, you'll see the agencies, many agencies are supposed to be reporting back to these non-existent committees. And so one of the, as you go through what you'll see is what has been substituted in most of those statutes that we've amended is simply a direction of the agency to report to the appropriate committee rather than to this committee that doesn't exist. So, pretty simple bill. The Dash 1 amendments does everything except the Joint Audit Committee, but all the remaining committees that are mentioned in the measure summary would be non-existent. It would not mean, of course, that the legislature could not create such committees if they wanted to and appoint members, but it would be up to the president and the speaker as to what those speakers would, what those committees would be.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I think this is appropriate. I guess the thing I consider unfortunate, and I'll use the Oregon Summit Recovery Plan as an example, when that was created for specific purpose for us to be on top of the issue and somehow over the course of time, because I was involved in the very beginning of that in 97, over the course of time it has slipped off the radar probably to a degree that is not beneficial to us. So maybe by eliminating these statutorily we can make a better case for standing committees to deal with these specific issues. These are important issues, but sometimes we kind of lose sight of the issue and I saw this as an opportunity to make that point.
I think you're right. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. I think we're going into work session on this one. Let's close the public hearing on 967, open a work session on Senate Bill 967.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 967.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 967. Any comments, discussion? Hearing none, so approved.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 967 as amended to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 967 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Let's call the roll. Any discussion? Okay.
Aye.
Senator
Moore?
Aye.
Senator Weston?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senate Bill 967 has been approved by this committee. Is on its way. Who'd like to carry that? I got a volunteer. Okay. Senator Westland. All right. We'll go right into a public hearing on Senate Bill 1040.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1040 might look a lot like Senate Bill 533 to those of you that follow these things closely. It requires school district boards to adopt policies and procedures for kindergarten through grade 12 students to self-administer asthma or severe allergy medication. absolves certain school personnel from criminal action or for civil damages if assisting students with self-administration medication under certain circumstances, defines relevant terms, declares an emergency, and take effect July 1st, 2007.
Okie dokie. We're not spending a lot of time on this because we've seen this before. A lot of people have signed up, but I'm limiting your testimony. Senator Cruz, I know this was your priority bill you did in conjunction with the Senate President. Did you want to comment before we get started?
Just in general terms, I think the reason that it became a priority bill was because we looked at other issues that could not be addressed in the original bill because of the narrowness of the relating clause. We had a work group, all parties were at the table of that work group, and I know there are some people that still have some concerns over specifics, but you know, we can wordsmith things for a long, long time, I think, conceptually. And actually, in the way it's written, I think this addresses all concerns. I know, I'm willing to listen as we move forward with this program. I think this is life-saving work for students. I am personally quite pleased with the product. And I know the President is quite pleased, and I want to thank everybody for their input into this. And I also want to use this as an opportunity to thank Dana, who is, if I was chair of this committee, I don't think I could have picked a better administrator than she is.
I know that.
And having been a chair before, I know how important it is to have a good administrator to make the chair look good.
That is very true.
So I just want to thank Dana for her hard work on this, and she did very well on this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. I do appreciate those comments about Ms. Richardson. She is top notch and does a lot of work for us. Okay, I'm going to ask my staff, who should be listening, to bring me down Senate Bill 533, please. And Mr. Okulich, I believe Dana Kay is with you. Okay, I'll have you two up, and then after you, I'll have the other three that are signed up to testify. And we're not taking any more than 10 minutes on this bill.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Okulich, here on behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon. Next to me is Dana Kay from the American Lung Association. Many of you have heard testimony before from Beverly Stewart. She's our asthma coordinator. I know she worked on the work group. She was unfortunately couldn't be here today. She's been pretty ill. So Dana offered to come down and sort of sit in her place instead. So I understand we're on limited time. I will be very brief. We think Senate Bill 1040 is a great bill. It's a step up from Senate Bill 533. It was sort of a collaboration of efforts between the various parties. We've worked with the school nurses, we've worked with COSA, the Department of Ed, the Oregon Education Association, and the Oregon School Boards Association. So we think this is sort of a reflection of a lot of people's priorities and what people wanted, certainly in this bill. And we also just wanted to, again, thank Senator Cruz for being able to expand this bill and to include in severe allergies, which we do think was missing from the original Senate Bill 530. So on behalf of the Lung Association, I would just ask your support of Senate Bill 1040.
Well, Mr. Okulich, I'm glad we didn't hear this bill on Tuesday, because Senate Bill 1040 gives me the IRS heebie-jeebies. I just realized that. So
I didn't make that connection either.
All right, Ms. Kay, do you have a few comments?
I do. Senator Walker and members of the committee, thank you for having me. I'm sorry Beverly's not here this morning because she is definitely our asthma expert, but I just would like to say that the American Lung Association...
Can you tell us your name for the record, please?
Dana Kay, sorry.
Thank you.
Unlike Dana. Those are very nice accolades. Congratulations. My name is Dana, and my last name is Kay. I work for the American Lung Association of Oregon, and I'm sitting in for Beverly Stewart this morning. And I'd just like to say that the American Lung Association of Oregon is here in support of Senate Bill 1040. Our mission is to prevent lung disease and promote lung health, and Senate Bill 1040 is a good public health policy for Oregon. And we appreciate all the work and all the work that everyone has done, and we think this is a great step forward.
Okay, great. Any questions from the committee? All right. We will hear from the other three.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Linda Rose Alloway, Carol Zirkel, and Patricia Campbell.
Madam Chair, let me just state for the record that COSA and OSBA is supportive of the bill. The liability issues have been taken care of to their satisfaction.
Okay.
Saying so, having to come up and say that.
Great. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Linda Rose Alloway. I'm a licensed respiratory care practitioner. I formerly worked for the American Lung Association of Oregon as their state asthma program manager. I currently work for Multnomah County Health Department as an asthma educator. I'm a certified asthma educator and a licensed respiratory care practitioner. I also work for Portland Providence Medical Center as a respiratory therapist and pulmonary health educator. I'm here today as a friend of this bill. I am pleased to see the work that's done on it. I have Bev Stewart contacted me several weeks ago about the problems that the bill was encountering. I gave her some information and direction about that. I started to monitor the progress of the bill and became concerned about what was happening with it. I did some research on what is driving this bill, which is the Public Law 108-377, passed by the U.S. Congress October 30th, 2004. I'm not going to go into details of this, but I talked with the nonprofit agency, the Allergy and Asthma Network, Mothers of Asthmatics, who sponsored this legislation and who now monitor it. You can read the status of what is happening in each individual state on their website. I talked to their director of governmental affairs, who was the sponsor of the federal legislation, and we discussed the content of that and the intention. According to that organization, Oregon is already in compliance with the federal statute with one exception, and that is that we do not include injectable epinephrine, because our original legislation was passed in the 90s when I was working at the Lung Association, and I worked with those parties at that time. We were not considering people with school kids with allergies. We were focusing on asthmatics. So what needs to be done in this bill is to simply add requirement that we provide that school children who are prescribed by their physician because of their disease status may self-carry injectable epinephrine to treat allergy attacks.
Is that in the bill? Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. That was why we mm-hmm. had to go to a different bill, because we had that conversation.
Yeah, right. And I just want to continue. I'm certainly willing to work with all parties. From my background, I received an award yesterday from the American Lung Association.
Oh, congratulations.
Asthma advocate. I'm just thrilled to pieces because of the work that I've done. I gave you more history. I provide that. We don't need to go into my history. So anyway, I want to see this happen. I want it done as simply as possible and as effectively as possible. So that I can remember when I worked at the Lung Association, I used to get calls from people, and working on a case-by-case basis and with their school district, we could generally resolve those issues. So I think that's what it takes, and given the backing of good legislation.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Okay, ladies.
Hi. For the record, my name is Carol Zirkel, and I'm the president of Oregon School Nurses Association. Excuse me. I'd like to thank Linda Rose for coming. She contacted me, and we've had dialogue and et cetera about everything that's going to be said today. She also pointed me. I enclosed in my packet for you the law she referenced, the federal law, just for your information. Oh, and the only reason that I can remember the number of this law is it hit me right away that it was my tax 1040. So. I think that we need this law. I think that we need children to be able to self-carry and to self-medicate. I am not opposed to that at all. I'd address three. They are small issues, but they have really important health repercussions if they're not addressed. If they cannot be addressed now, if they could even be considered to be addressed on the House side, Oregon School Nurses Association would be happy to support this legislation. The three concerns briefly are in the and what I also included was the law itself in the box. On each page, there's a box. In that box, I wrote how the law reads now and the concern and how we would like it changed. In the definition of medication, any medication prescribed by physicians, et cetera, is used. That opens the door to medications like corticosteroids that are not life-saving. If a student has a corticosteroid inhaler at school and he also has a bronchodilator inhaler at school, if he chooses the wrong one, if he's in crisis, he picks the wrong one, or somebody runs to get his backpack and they pick the wrong one, it will not help and his condition will only worsen. That is why we suggested medication means life-saving rescue bronchodilators and auto-injectable epinephrine. We support that completely. Even the mechanism of delivery doesn't matter. There are new mechanisms of delivery that come on the stage every single day. But what does not change is that it is a bronchodilator. It opens up the airway so students can breathe. The second one is verbiage that, as written, that the student demonstrate to the school staff person who has been designated to administer medications to students. You have defined the school secretary. In Oregon schools, it is not nurses that provide that. It is the school secretary. We are not even asking for nurses to be in this language. All we are asking for is that require that the student demonstrate to the school staff person who has been designated by the administrator. The administrator in any school is the principal. He decides who does what. He designates to that person this needs to be done. As you have defined it, you have defined that the school secretary is going to be assessing whether or not a student is capable of using his inhaler. By simply changing it to the person designated by the administrator, then that is his role to designate who that is. And then,
okay, oh, Senator, yes, sir.
And I appreciate, thank you, Madam Chair, I appreciate your point on this, but I think it's a matter of interpretation, and that's not how I interpret it. It's quite simply, it says, require that the student demonstrate to the school staff person who has been designated. Okay. I don't think that's a default designation. The designation is made by the administrator. So that, I mean, that is what will happen. I mean, by saying it's who has been designated, it implies that a designation has been made.
Designated to administer medication.
Yes. And they're required to do that now.
Yes, sir. The school staff person who has been designated to administer medication is in reality the school secretary. Even if you just the staff person who has been designated and cross out to administer medication. You don't even have to add the word. Yeah. All I'm saying is that in reality, in the world of education, the person in Oregon schools today that administers medications is the school secretary.
Okay. Ms. Zirkel?
Yes, ma'am.
I know you were at the work group. There was a lot of time spent on this, and I'm not going to spend any more time on it here today.
Okay.
I appreciate your comments and your suggestions. We're going to move the bill as it is.
Okay.
And if you want to keep working on that over in the House because you still disagree with Senator Cruz about that, I encourage you to do that. But I just can't spend any more time on it today because you had a big work group.
Important.
Okay, and then we need to finish up.
In the federal law, on the fourth page, in the federal law, I circled where they reference backup medications.
Okay.
And that's all we're asking for, is that backup medications be delineated.
Okay.
We think this is a great law. We want kids to self-care. We want kids to self-medicate. We have offered to the American Lung Association to work with them directly with any district or any staff that is not allowing it.
Okay.
Thank you.
As I said, we don't just don't have any more time. We have to move these bills. So,
may I ask the a process question?
Mm-hmm.
Is there an opportunity to address this in the House?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
What we do now, the bill, when we pass it out of committee, it'll go to the floor of the Senate. If the Senate colleagues that we share time with on the floor agree this is a good bill, it'll then go over to the House, and the whole process starts all over again.
Oh,
so we're going to dump this on them. And I'm going to make sure that they get the information in the file.
Madam Chair, you're going to offer them a very good bill, and we're not dumping it on them. So.
Yes, there's a better way of saying what I just said, but we've spent a lot of time on this. That's sort of my frustration level, and we're going
to
offer
thank
this
Senator
information.
Cruz for offering his priority bill. This is a great improvement, and just a teeny few tweaks to make it ultra safe for children. And I want to thank you very much for offering your priority bill.
Okay.
My pleasure.
And I thank you because your input was important, and I understand the work group was very well done, and as we know, our administrator, Dana. And Dana, I appreciate that you came today. We don't have time to hear from you. Or you're Linda.
Patricia.
You're Patricia. I'm all messed up.
Dana already talked.
Dana already talked. That's right.
I
tell you, it's a fascinating day today in the Senate Education and General Government Committee. Thank you, ladies. All right, I'm closing the public hearing before I get in any more trouble. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 1040.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1040 to the Senate floor to be passed recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1040 to the floor of the Senate with due pass recommendation. Any comments?
Just very briefly, we got, I will have to say, I appreciate the work that the school nurses did and the work group and the suggestions they made. I truly do. I think where we're at now basically is a matter of interpretation. And I don't think anybody's driving to a different point here. It's just a matter of how we're reading the words and how we think they impact. So I'm more than willing to continue that discussion on the House side. But this is a bill that's much broader than the original bill, and I think simpler and easier to administer than the original bill. So I want to thank everybody for the help they gave on this.
Okay, we're in work session, Senator Metzger, on this bill, Senate Bill 1040. Do you have any comments?
No, I do appreciate all the work that Dana and Senator Cruz did on this.
Yeah, and if there are matters of interpretation, like I said, the House can have that conversation. And I do appreciate, that's why we have public hearings and work sessions and work groups, is so people from the public can actually have input, and you did, and we appreciate your emails and comments. All right. We have a stand-in for Ms. Gravel. She's arrived just at this moment. Will you take the roll, please?
Senator Metzger.
Hi.
Senator Warren.
Hi.
Senator Westman. Hi.
Oh, he's excused.
Hi.
Hi.
Senate Bill 1040 is on its way to the House. to the Senate.
It's an expedited process.
A reasonable assumption, Madam
Chair.
Yeah, so.
You know, I just like to go back to bed this morning and start over. It would be a really great thing for me. I've just been on triple time here. So Senator Cruz, I'm going to have you and Senator Courtney carry this.
Madam Chair, I asked the President, and he said he'd just soon have me carry it.
Okay, so. It's all yours. It's on its way to the Senate. Thank you. Close that work session. Okay, open a public hearing on Senate Bill, or SCR 14.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, SCR 14 commends the South Lane School District Superintendent Krista Parent for being named the National Superintendent of the Year.
Great. Senator Przanski, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4. And as your administrator has said, this bill is a one that would actually be a concurrent resolution to honor Krista Parent, who is the superintendent of Cottage Grove, or South Wing School District, in Cottage Grove. And the reason I've used a priority bill on this is because I believe it's important for us to recognize these type of achievements. It's worth noting that Krista actually started as a teacher in the South Lane School District and has basically committed and dedicated her life to that district, and has actually moved through the ranks from teacher into administration, and now is the actual superintendent. This award that she received is the first time for an Oregon superintendent to be bestowed upon, and it's my understanding that the size of the school district that she is the administrator, I believe it is the smallest school district to be recognized, if I was correct as to the information I received. Krista was acknowledged in New Orleans, where the award was given back in March. It was March 1st or 2nd when the announcement was made. I can tell you from the community of Cottage Grove, we are very excited as to what she has brought to the school district. It's worth noting that she was instrumental in getting a new high school built there. After many attempts, they were able to do to accomplish that task, and that she's also been able to move the achievements on the academic level of the school district to a much higher level than it has been in the past. So accordingly, I'm asking you to move forward SCR 14 so it can move to the floor and we can have her honored. I will note that for the record that I did ask and Representative Bruce Hanna was willing to sign on as a co-chief sponsor. So in a bipartisan effort, we want to make certain the recognition is there, and that's why it's going to be a concurrent resolution to allow it to move forward for the House to hear as well.
Thank you, Senator Przanski. I notice in the resolution it also indicates that there is a $10,000 college scholarship for an Oregon high school student that comes with this award.
That's correct. And
that's
so
fantastic.
I'm assuming that that will be made available to someone within the South Lane School District, since that's the district that she represents. And it is another opportunity for her to do what she's done throughout her career, and that's give more back to her students.
We have been honored in this committee to have her up here and testify, actually, on a bill we have for work session today. And so it was really a treat to have her here. Any questions from the committee? Okay, great. Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate that you used a priority bill to honor someone like this. Kent Hunsager, I think you wanted to come up and say a few words.
Mm-hmm. Chair Walker, members of the committee, Kent Hunsaker, Executive Director with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And just a few words about Krista and the process. The National Superintendent of the Year program involves 49 states, not 50, because Hawaii only has one school district, so they would have the same 49 states. Applications come in and are reviewed by a national committee of folks. Four finalists are selected, and those finalists then go through a rigorous interview process in Washington, D.C. Krista had that opportunity to be with the other four candidates, and they took great care of them. But she was talking about how intense it was to interview in the Capitol with a variety of people. Krista obviously rose to the top of that process. It was presented the award in New Orleans, had the opportunity to have several members of her staff there, several members of her community there, her business community also. I wanted to mention something that, I think is a characteristic of people like Cresta. This is that COSA was and OSBA together were doing a new process where we were helping districts communicate better in their organizations. And Cresta immediately offered to be one of the first districts that went through our process. When we got there and started working with their staff, what we discovered is that they are already exemplary. And that, but that a characteristic of people like Cresta and districts like that is that the ones that are really good, they want to get better, no matter what. There's always an upper level to it. Cresta has brought that to Cottage Grove. Senator Przanski has mentioned that she's taught there. She's been an administrator there. She's been 17 years in the district. She's Oregon's first national superintendent of the year. We applaud her and the work that she's doing, and her being a representative of outstanding superintendents across the nation. So, thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Any questions or comments? Thanks, Mr. Hunsaker.
We should also just put on the record, she is also a graduate of the University of Oregon.
Oh.
She got all of her degrees.
That makes it even better.
Well, now I got questions.
I hope she doesn't plan on leaving anytime soon. It would be a real disappointment if she left to go to other pastures because she's doing such a wonderful job for us.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing on SCR 14, open a work session.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt SCR 14 and send it to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Great. Senator Cruz moves we adopt SCR 14 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to say that for a period of time I was the representative from Cottage Grove and got to know Cresta, and she is absolutely outstanding. This is well deserved, and I want to thank Senator Przanski for bringing this forward.
And I do too. Thank you. Ms. Gravel?
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse.
Vice Chair
Cruz.
Aye.
Chair Walker. Aye. SCR 14 passes, and it is going to the Senate first. Senator Przanski, I'll have you carry that. Okay, we're going to move right into our next bill. Colleagues, at 9 a.m., we will take a moment of silence. At the governor has requested that people all across Oregon observe what happened to the students and their families at Virginia Tech. So we will do that at 9, whatever we will be in the middle of. So I'm going to move to a public hearing, a work session. Woo, work session on Senate Bill 382.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have before you Senate Bill 382 as well as 11 amendments, but there's no dash 9. It goes to dash 12. I am happy to speak to the bill or to amendments that we discussed yesterday, Madam Chair.
Let's just tell the folks here at the dais which amendments we want to work with, which ones we do not want to work with. And there are reasons, colleagues, there are so many different amendments, and we went through them yesterday, and I think, Ms. Richardson, you know which ones we've decided not to use.
I do. Members of the committee, we will focus our attention today on the dash 2 amendments, the dash 5 amendments, the dash 8, and the dash 12. Maybe it would be helpful for me to speak to those briefly. The dash 2 amendments gut and stuff the original bill. It directs the State Board of Education to adopt and review prioritized criteria used by voluntary organizations, which refers to voluntary organizations that administer interscholastic activities. I just shortened it to voluntary organizations. Establishing districts, the criteria would include the impact on students' academic schedules, fiscal impacts on districts, and the impact of providing safe transportation. It would authorize the board to suspend or revoke the approval of the voluntary organization if those specified criteria are not followed. It would apply the new criteria to districting beginning on or after July 1st, 2008. It would declare an emergency and be effective upon passage. So that's our dash 2s. The dash 5s also are gotten stuff to the original bill. They authorize an appeal to the superintendent for voluntary organizations' decisions regarding student eligibility to participate in interscholastic activities. It prohibits a voluntary organization's appeal from the superintendent's decision and declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. It's really kind of a different set of issues in the Dash 5s, which is similar to the different set of issues. I'm sorry, it's not similar. It's similar in the sense that they are separate in the Dash 8s. The Dash 8s direct the superintendent to establish districts and place schools within districts, permits voluntary organizations to submit recommendations for placement of schools into districts to the superintendent, allows schools to request placement in another district to the superintendent, requires voluntary organizations to ensure participating students are safe from and take punitive action against interscholastic teams that participate in discrimination, harassment, or assault. It permits a voluntary organization to conduct cultural sensitivity training, declares an emergency and take effect upon passage. Lastly, the Dash 12s, which are just hot off the presses this morning but are in front of you here today, replace the bill and require voluntary organizations to conduct their discussions and decisions relating to the placement of schools into districts in meetings that are open to member organizations. It requires the voluntary organization to make a record of those meetings and make related documents available to member organization. Declares an emergency and take effect upon passage. I'm afraid that was confusing, but...
Well, it was... this whole bill has been confusing with all the amendments, but I think we've come to some agreement here, I hope, and I'd like to have some folks come up and talk about it. We also have Ms. Hunt in the audience if we need her to explain anything. So, Chris, do you want to come up? Bring whoever's with you. School District 4J has sort of been the driving force behind these amendments, given the chair represents School District 4J as part of my district, and I didn't have time to work on this as much as I wanted to. So, Chris, tell us what's going on here.
Madam Chair and members, Chris Schultz representing the Eugene 4J School District. my understanding about the many sets of amendments is the Dash 2 set of amendments was drafted at the request of Senator Metzger. It preserves Senator Metzger's 2003 law, which required the state board to become slightly more involved in the OSAA redistricting process and makes a variety of changes that Eugene 4J believes moves in the right direction, specifically really focusing on class time of students, travel, the safety of travel, and the fiscal impact to school districts of slotting schools into leagues. The Dash 12
amendment... Well, before we go to the Dash 12, let me just ask Senator Metzger, because you did draft these, mm-hmm. and do you agree with that representation?
Are you talking about the Dash 2?
Yeah, the Dash 2.
Yes. The only difference was, if I may ask... Ms. Hunt, what was the revision number of the one that we did to the Dash 2? I've lost track of my numbers, Madam Chair.
Yeah, I know. It's easy to do with all this.
It was the Section 2 part. The representation that was made here is correct. However, there was a question about retroactivity, and I asked Ms. Hunt to change that, and I can't remember if you got that or not.
Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's Office. Chair Walker, Senator Metzger, your revisions are reflected in the Dash 9s, which I don't think is in front of the committee.
We haven't seen them.
Oh, we'll have to get those.
We were wondering about the Dash 9s yesterday, and you're the mystery man behind the Dash 9.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to...
I can tell you what they are, Madam Chair. The Dash 9 is exactly like the 2, except that in Section 2, which is on page 2, it makes it clear that beginning on or after July 1, 2008, that any changes are prospective and not requiring retroactive changes. And that just clarified that, and I apologize. I'll have my staff bring those down. But other than that, that's the only change, is just clarifying prospective versus retroactive on Section 2.
Okay. Well, it's going to be 9 o'clock in about 15 seconds, though every clock in this building is not the same. Maybe your staff could bring that down while we take a moment. I appreciate the governor has made this gesture so that we can respect these families and these people, young people who have lost their lives. So we will take a moment of silence at this time.
Thank you, colleagues. Such tragedy in the world sometimes. Okay, so Senator Metzger is going to bring the dash 9 down. So the dash 9, then, Mr. Schultz, would supersede the dash 2, and that's the one we'd be working with?
That's my understanding.
Okay. All right. Can you go on from there, then? What's the next one you're going to talk about?
Sure. The dash 12 amendment would open OSAA redistricting meetings and records to member schools, but not to the public. Not the intent to make OSAA a public body, have to comply with open meetings law, just that we've all been in a meeting where you might not have a vote, but you're invited to sit on the sidelines and watch the action. We think under the old leagues, Eugene Forget's representative at OSA, who actually had a vote, was from Coos Bay. Under the new league, the representative is from Grants Pass. They're people with fundamentally different interests, and recognizing the structure of OSA, where you have a league and they elect one person, they get to go vote at the meetings, we think member schools should have the right to sit on the sidelines and watch the meeting happen. So the Dash 12 amendment would put that into place.
Okay. So you're responsible for the 12s, and we've talked about the 2 and the 9. Now, what's the dash 5? Is that one mine?
Senator Walker, I believe that one is yours.
Oh, okay, you have one issue with what?
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I believe another party's amendment.
Okay, dash 5. I talked about those yesterday. Colleagues, the dash 5 came to me from Rob Kramer. And apparently there's a House bill on the House side that has this small provision in it. And it came about because of a student who had moved to another district and then was not allowed to play sports because OSA doesn't allow that. And this student moved from, I believe, Portland to Klamath Falls. And so the Dash 5 would allow that decision to be appealed to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. I believe the rule is in place, and I see some folks are here from OSAA that might be able to respond to that, but I believe the rule is in place so that districts are not recruiting star athletes. But in some cases, athletes just move with their families. And so that's what this is about. Does someone from OSAA want to come up and talk about the Dash 5? And I'll have you address all the other ones, too, when we're done, but this one specifically, since there's no one here to talk about them.
Senator Walker, members of the committee, I'm Tom Welter, Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association. The OSA has rules by which when families move, the students are eligible. The family in question, the student moved, the family moved from the, I think from the Colton area to Klamath Falls, and the student enrolled in school at the local public school. And then during the course of the school year, the student decided to transfer schools from a public school to a private school without moving. That is not allowed by OSA rules, but there are appeals processes in place by which they can seek a waiver of the rule. The family, the school appealed to the local district committee. The request was denied. The appeal then moved to an eligibility appeals board. The request was denied, and then the appeal did go to the state superintendent, and the OSA decision to denial of eligibility was upheld. So there are actually three appeals processes already in place for students in that situation.
Okay, so you don't feel that this amendment would be necessary?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say, Madam Chair, if the final arbiter is already the superintendent, that's what this amendment tries to make happen. So.
Okay, Senator Metzger has a comment.
I don't think that's exactly accurate.
Okay.
This is not my amendment, but just speaking up on it. Yes, it can go to the superintendent, but the superintendent rules based on whether there's a violation of the law, not on whether it was they don't have the latitude, which is the same issue we have with redistricting. Based on current law, they make that judgment. They don't have the latitude to make the judgment based on whether I think this is unfair or unjust treatment. So what this amendment would do is would give greater latitude to the superintendent in which to make a judgment as opposed to making a judgment based on the current statute. I think that's the key difference.
So that is a distinction with a difference.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, you want to respond to that, Mr. Walter?
Yes, Senator Walker and Senator Metzger, members of the committee. The current procedure is that, Senator Metzger is correct, the superintendent can overturn the denial of eligibility if the organization violated a federal law, a state law, one of the rules of the Department of Education, or one of our own rules, or we didn't follow our own processes. The decisions that are made by professional educators, both at the local level and the district committee level, and then it goes to the state superintendent, who appoints a hearings officer. And I think we firmly believe that the professional educators that are, first of all, on the local level, close to the situation, render a decision, and they have the authority to waive our rules and make the student eligible. If that appeal at that level is denied, then they appeal to an eligibility appeals board, which is not made up of OSA staff members or board members. It's made up of 30 people from across the state. There are 10 school administrators, 10 lay citizens, non-school people, and 10 school board members, and representing all the congressional districts in the state of Oregon. We convene 5 of those people to come in to listen to a particular appeal. We invite the family, the school, whoever, to come in and have a hearing before that group, and then those 5 people render a decision. So we think we have a very fair process now, and we don't think that it would be appropriate if we followed our process that the decision be overturned unless we violated one of the processes.
Okay. Thank you. If you want to step back, we'll bring you back up when we're done with all
Thank
the
you.
Other ones. So, colleagues, is anyone interested in these dash fives?
Well, I don't think it's a bad idea to be able to have flexibility by the superintendent in a situation that unforeseen by this committee or the OSAA or others that may just not quite fit into the box. I mean, it doesn't require that the superintendent grant eligibility. It would simply say, here's an unusual situation that maybe no one had thought about, and I'd like to have a chance to review it. I don't think that's a bad step to necessarily give the superintendent. It's always hard to project exactly a circumstance that may violate certain processes, but on its face would have a different interpretation. And I'm not going to sweat bullets over it, but I don't think that's a bad tool to give the superintendent.
Okay. Any other comments?
No, Madam Chair, I respectfully disagree. I think due process is already in place, and it's being vetted by people who have the local expertise and local knowledge, and I guess I think it's appropriate the way it is now that the superintendent does have the oversight over the process to make sure that it was handled appropriately, all steps were taken, and everybody had their opportunity. It's very extraordinary, I think, that this gets that far anyway. But I'm at this point, I think this is maybe for these very rare occasions, this is using a sledgehammer to kill a fly, and the process currently in place, I think, has stood well over time. So I'm sure I'm not necessarily interested in the fives.
Okay, Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would agree with Senator Cruz. As a matter of policy, when you have such rigorous processes in place, as a matter of policy, do you want the final adjudicator to be a politician? And that's the policy issue here.
Well, yeah, I guess she is a politician. All right. Well, we'll get back to this. I just wanted to see what the tenor of the committee was on these amendments. I agreed to offer them up, but there's no one here to testify on behalf of them. But I thought we should have a discussion. Okay. So, Mr. Schultz, come on back up. We've discussed the twos, which are going to be replaced by the nines. We are now in possession of the nines. And then we've just talked about the fives. And then we've got the dash eight left to go. So let's talk about the 12s. thought we talked about the 12s.
Did we?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
So let's talk about the dash 9s now that they're in our hands. Do you have those, Mr. Schultz?
Don't actually.
Yeah, you okay, so we'll get back to the... This was the dash 2, and these have replaced the dash 2, and tell us specifically where that change has taken place. Ms. Hunt probably knows that.
Okay. Chair Walker, members of the committee, Cindy Hunt, again, Legislative Council's office. The only change in the dash 9s from the dash 2s is found on page 2 in section 2, and it's in the applicability clause. And what it says is any interscholastic activity district established on or after the effective date of the act has to comply with the new criteria. So what that means is any interscholastic activity district that exists now does not have to comply with that criteria if it continues on into the future. But if they do new activity districts after the effective date of the act, then they do have to, at that point, comply with the criteria.
Oh. Well, that troubles me because I thought it was just not being retroactive on any of the redistricting they've already done. But if they do another redistricting, then does this bill apply?
Exactly. Oh, if they do it after the effective date of the act, yes.
Okay.
Yes, in other words, Madam Chair, it doesn't require them to go back and change what they've done.
Right.
But the next time they do anything, this would then have to apply.
Okay. I was thinking of creation of just a new district, but this is like redistricting, what they just went through.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chair Walker, whereas the dash 2s, what they did is they said beginning on or after July 1, 2008, these activity districts had to use the criteria. So the voluntary organizations would have had to have gone in and changed their districts potentially under the dash 2s.
Okay.
Whereas under the dash 9s, that's not necessarily the case.
And it's my understanding that the approval for this redistricting was only given for a year. Wasn't that correct? Didn't the state board approve it for only a year because they were concerned about some of the provisions? Mr. Schultz?
Senator Walker, members of the committee, there may be others who could answer this better than I could. My understanding is that redistricting, that the new districts last for 4 years, between 2006 and 2010. Separately, the state board approves OSAA as the as the administrator of that. That approval was for 1 year and is subject to renewal, I think, currently.
Okay, great. Thanks for correcting me. I knew there was a one-year provision in there. Okay, so we're stuck with this for 4 years. I have a strange way of saying things this morning. Like I said, go back to bed. Start over. Okay. All right. So let's move on. Do we want to talk about the dash 9s right now, or we just want to hear about... Let's hear about the other amendments first, and then we'll discuss the rest of them. The dash 8s. Those are mine, correct? Let me find them. Yes. The dash 8s. The dash 8s came to my attention because some constituents in my district were concerned about some alleged racial incidents at a tournament in Eugene. And so they offered these amendments as a way to address some of those issues. Mr. Schultz, can you just tell me what's going on in the school district to address that?
Senator Walker, members of the committee, unfortunately, misconduct at sporting events sometimes involves adults and members of the community who are not students or members of the team. Eugene 4J has strong policies in place and a formal process for investigating things of this nature. It's my understanding from representatives of the district that the allegations that have been brought to light related to the recent basketball tournament are being investigated by two people, including a former police officer who's the district's director of security. That investigation is ongoing. Because the allegations involve multiple people at multiple places, including, you know, restaurants in town and something that might have happened in middle school but not, you know, at the tournament, the facts are not all clear. We'd be happy to brief you on that when the investigation is complete, but want to be very clear that if the under existing district policy, if students or adults who are under the control of the district misbehave, the district already has a policy in place for dealing with that. Once the investigation is complete, they'll report to Superintendent Russell, and he'll take appropriate action to the extent that those folks are under the control of the school district.
Okay. So the effect of this amendment, actually, Mr. Welter, you folks stay right here. Mr. Welter, why don't you just take that third seat at the table so we don't have to keep popping you up and down. So talk to me about what the impact of the Dash 8s would be on your organization and what you're doing already to address these kinds of boorish behavior.
Well, Senator Walker, members of the committee, I don't have a copy of the Dash 8s, but it's now I do have a copy of the Dash 8s. Thank you, Ms.
That is just amazing how quickly that happened.
It's an efficient organization.
Yes, we run an efficient committee.
We are currently, as was alluded to, we are currently also, we hired a private investigator to look into the alleged incidents that occurred during the recent state basketball tournament at Eugene. Our investigator has not completed her investigation. We expect to get a final report from her next week. We will share that with our executive board, and then, as directed, we will share it with the state superintendent of public instruction at her request. I think that any proposed amendments at this time would be premature in that, you know, I know that the Eugene School District is conducting their own investigation. We're conducting an investigation. Certainly none of us condone any of the alleged incidents if indeed they occurred. That's what we're trying to determine, what actually did occur, mm-hmm. where did it occur, when did it occur. And we've asked our investigator not only to give us findings of fact, but also to give us recommendations. And we will review those as an executive board, as an association, as we deal with our 290-member schools. Unfortunately, we can't turn back the clock if something did happen, but we can certainly do everything under our power to make sure that nothing happens in the future.
Okay. Do you have a timeline on completion of that investigation?
She is scheduled to have a report to us on or before April 25th.
Okay. Well, it seems to me then this bill would have, if we can get it moving and over to the House, that they can address that issue in the House if we find that there are some ways that need to be addressed that are not being currently addressed through your own rules. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I think I'm going to take the Dash 8s off the table. So then that leaves us with the Dash 12. And we talked about that already. Do we need a buffer or... do you need a recap on the Dash 12?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think I would also like to have on the record, I know that the board is meeting today, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to kind of have a sense of the direction that the board is going to be taking on their own, just because I'm not sure some of these issues may be being addressed, and it may not be necessary for us to be legislating this.
Okay. Let's just, the Dash 12 was opening their meetings up to the public, and that's what that was
right.
regarding. All right. So, Mr. Welter, you have not commented on the Dash 9 and the Dash 12, and I think that's all we're considering right now. Well, the Dash 5... you've already addressed, and I'm not sure we've got the votes for that one. So talk to me about the Dash 9s and the Dash 12s.
The Dash 9 amendments, I do have a copy of those in front of me, Chair Walker. We have attended three public hearings with a subcommittee of the State Board of Education. I think in their attempts to comply with Senator Metzger's previous legislation from last session or two sessions ago, they are looking, and as we speak, they are meeting, and on their agenda this morning are some modifications to a current Oregon administrative rule and also some language for a new Oregon administrative rule that deal with these same issues. And certainly as an organization, we dealt with some of this at our legislative meeting on this Monday, and we modified language in our own constitution in trying to address and clarify some of these same issues. So it would be our recommendation that we leave the authority to deal with these issues as already outlined under Senator Metzger's previous legislation to the State Board of Education, and we're working with them to comply with the rules as currently written. We don't think further legislation is necessary.
Okay. Does that include your comment about the Dash 12 opening your meetings?
The Dash 12s, we had at our meeting on Monday, we had to ask our 41 people from all across the state regarding the process by which we conduct classification district committee meetings. And we listened to that. Our board will address that issue at their, you know, we got the comments back from we divide into classification. So 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, 6A all huddled together, talked about it. We got the comments back from each of those caucus groups, and we will be addressing that with our executive board and with our membership. And certainly I think the general consensus was that if we opened up the meetings are all open, and certainly everything that we did during the last classification districting process, all the minutes, everything is still on our website, you know, and following every meeting, we post exactly what the committee did, what direction they're going, when the next meeting is, and invite people to either come to the next meeting to testify in person or to provide written comment that we would provide for the committee. The discussion that centered around the caucus item on Monday was that should we allow anybody to come to the work sessions after we've taken the public testimony? Should we allow school representatives? Should we allow league representatives? And that's what our board will address. It appeared that there was some thoughts from some of the caucus groups that allowing members representing member schools to attend those work sessions would be a good idea, and that's what we will address. Please understand that when we conduct those meetings, we take public testimony at every meeting. If there are three people and it takes 5 minutes, we take 5 minutes. If there are 33 people and it takes 4 hours, we listen to public testimony for 4 hours. Not one person, and we had students, we had coaches, we had parents, we had school administrators, not one person was ever not allowed to speak before that committee during our public sessions. Then they went into a closed work session with just members of the committee. We've never had a member school request to attend the work session. We've had requests from media to attend the work session, but we've never had a request from a member school. We're discussing that now as to whether or not we as an organization should do that. I think it should be left up to the 290 schools to determine whether or not we open those work sessions and how we open those, and not by legislative action.
Okay. Mr. Schultz, do you have a response to that?
Senator Walker, members of the committee, the rule the State Board is considering later today would require OSAA to keep minutes of their meetings and then to send those minutes to the department 30 days after the issuance of final records. In the Internet age, I'm not sure what that means, but I think that means the minutes show up at the Department of Ed 30 or more days after the meeting actually happened. I think what Eugene Forge and other schools are asking for is the opportunity to sit on the sidelines and watch the meeting happen where the decision is made. We think that's a pretty reasonable request.
Okay. I saw some hands go up. Senator Morris and Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, it seems like much of what we're discussing with this bill is already underway. It's in place. The process is working. However, the Dash 12s, I think they make pretty good sense. Now, you may move there by rule, or the process may take us there, but for the work sessions to be open to member organizations just seems to make sense to me.
Okay. Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Madam Chair, because I'm reading the 12s now, and based on your testimony, I mean, the first thing the 12s do is say that the meetings are open to organizations members, and you're telling me they currently are open to the organizations members. Is that correct?
Senator Walker, Vice Chair Cruz, yes, all of our meetings are open to the public. You know, public testimony is accepted at every one of our classification and districting meetings. It's only after we went into a work session it was just members of the committee. I would prefer that you allow us to work through that within our organization. Again, we've never had a member school request to attend a work session.
Now, since this issue has been brought up, we discussed that. We discussed that, as I indicated, on Monday at our delegate assembly meeting, and we will now take that back to our board and review that. I would prefer that you give us the opportunity to work through that, and if indeed that's the will of the 290 schools, we will certainly open up those sessions to members of our own group. And I sense that that was the tenor of the group, but I can't speak because we haven't had a chance to meet with our board and to discuss that since the meeting only occurred on Monday.
Okay. Any further? You're contemplating. Okay, I'm going to move on while you're contemplating. Okay, any other questions of this panel, colleagues?
We have more panels.
I don't have anyone scheduled to speak. If there's someone who has a dying need to speak and address, Mr. DeVore? No? Okay. Then this is it. So, Senator Metzger.
Well, just a comment, and I appreciate Ms. Hunt's work on all these amendments and putting this together. I would say that I'm very pleased with the direction the OSA has taken and the State Board. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have, as I said before, originally with 388, the process was told the State Board to be involved, and they didn't really get involved. But the authority was there. They've taken that responsibility seriously. I think the OSAA and the board has heard very loud and clear about the priorities. And they, essentially the Dash 12, they've essentially, the board and OSA have adopted now, or in the process of adopting through rule of the criteria. They've actually taken another step, and on their voting board had a member of the State Board of Education. Now is going to be on the committee for the OSAA, which is another step I hadn't even thought of. I think strengthens that that proposal. I think opening to the public is important. You know, we've heard Mr. Welter that they are open. No one has asked before, and I think what this particular amendment does is, make sure that happens. But I think the direction is pretty well what we want, and the OSAA is well aware, as certainly is the State Board of Education, that we don't go away. We're going to be back in February. If everything fell apart, we'd be back in January. But I think I'm very pleased with what has happened. I think the things that we are talking about now, the State Board has adopted, or is the process of adopting, and an integrating direct relationship between the State Board of Education and OSAA, so they're a partner in these decision-making processes. And we can certainly adopt any of the amendments, Madam Chair, because I think they do a lot of things, but I think they're there. I think they've done it, and I think they have exercised the authority that they were given before and asked to do, and I really don't think we need to do it. That's just my view, but coming from me, I know Mr. Wilder finds that surprising, but I think they've done what they needed to do, and I think the State Board has stepped to the plate, and what the criteria that has been outlined is exactly what we're talking about here.
Okay. Senator Cruz and then Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to echo Senator Metzger's comments. Sometimes some of the best work that I've been involved with in this legislature is we shine a bright light on an issue and we have legislative concepts, and at the end of the day, those involved resolve the issues themselves or move in that direction. And so we don't have to create law for people to do the things that they should be doing. And from my perspective, I think that's a better outcome. We have enough laws, and just getting people to move in appropriate directions so that all sides can be accommodated, I think, is a good outcome. And I would agree with Senator Metzger. I think at this point in time, I would prefer not to legislate a direction already being taken.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have nothing more to add. I concur with the previous statement.
So would you not be interested in even the Dash 12 at this point?
Well, thank you for the follow-up question. I think with respect to Senator Metzger's comment is we will be back in February. The board is processing this issue. The OSAA is processing it. Sometimes we need to remember what the ultimate goal is, and that's appropriate change. How we get there, whether it's by statute or the processes actually working themselves, that the end result is really what counts. And I would suggest that we follow this and then look at it in February if there's something that is not appropriately addressed through existing processes.
Okay. Senator Wesson, do you have any comment about that?
Well, I just think that, in essence, excuse the analogy, but this issue in the latest redistricting has put the OSAA on stage with bright lights shining on them. They have indicated a willingness, in fact, acknowledged the responsibility to refine a process that I think has worked pretty well in the past. So let's see where this attention leads them and how soon they can respond. I very much look forward to a report in February.
Now, that's the session for an emergency yet to be determined, right? Is that February session?
That's right.
This is obviously an emergency yet to be determined.
All right. Well, it appears that the direction of this committee is to let the process that is already moving, that train, to keep going. I have to think that we had something to do with that train leaving the station. I would be prepared to move something here today, but I'm going to respond to my committee's wishes. And, Mr. Welter, just know that we're watching everything that you do over there.
Senator Walker, I don't think it is bright lights. I think it is heat lamps.
Yes. I would agree with you, sir. And I would, I know that you take the allegations of the racial harassment in Eugene as seriously as our district does, and that we will get to the bottom of it. And I appreciate the comments you made today. So thank you all for your extreme dedication. Ms. Hunt, again, as usual, you've risen to the top with your stellar performance, and we will close the work session on Senate Bill 382. Okay. We'll move to
89.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 989.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 989 exempts individual self-insured public body programs other than school districts, community college districts, or community college service districts from the insurance code if the annual contributions to the program aggregate at least $500,000. This is a bill we heard a couple weeks ago, and we have a Dash 1 amendment in front of us.
Okay.
The Dash 1 amendments exempt individual self-insured public body programs of school districts, community college districts, or community college service districts from the insurance code if the number of covered employees and dependents is at least 500 individuals. It exempts self-insured public body programs other than school districts, community college districts, or community college service districts from the insurance code if the number of covered employees and dependents is at least 500. It removes the annual contribution amount from criteria to be exempt from the insurance code for both individual and joint programs.
Okay. Mr. Sager, are you going to come up and tell us how this all happened?
Chair Walker, for the record, James Sager, Governor's Office. Members of the committee, trying to address the concerns that were brought forward by Senator Cruz and Senator Bates and Representative Maurer and others as to specific entities in their areas. In talking with everyone, we discovered that the insurance division's primary concern was the number of lives covered in a plan, and so that's why adding the word dependent helps meet the needs of the entities that the authors of the sponsors of the bill had brought forward, clarifies that, and removing the $500,000 number, it is so obsolete that it wasn't worth trying to recalculate a new how many millions of dollars would be needed, because that would constantly be changing. So the focus is on the number of lives covered in a plan. Aligning the schools with the other public bodies seemed to make sense, and so this appears to meet everyone's need.
A lot of shuttle diplomacy there when you're dealing with all these folks on both sides of the building. I think that does get to the issues. Senator Verger is happy as well.
Madam Chair, I spoke with all the interested parties, and they've all said that they're okay with the bill.
Okay. Any questions from any?
I think just a Scribner's correction that needs to be made on the Dash 1, where it says on page 2, line 2, after... No, that's not a deletion. Okay. That's a senator's error. Never mind.
Well, good. I'm glad. I'm glad I'm not the only one with an error in my head this morning.
Well, I saw the part word. I thought they were deleting that part word and not deleting it from the line above, but it's just an addition.
You know, Ms. Richardson saw a similar thing, and I said, well, let's take a look at the bill, and I looked at the bill, and we discovered that it was not a scrivener's error. All right. Thank you, Mr. Sager. We're in work session, colleagues, and I think they've solved this problem. So, Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 989.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 989. Any questions, discussion? Okay. That one is approved.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 989 as amended. What does it go? Four?
Yes.
For the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 989 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further comments? Take the roll, please.
Senator Metzger?
Oh, he's excused.
Senator
Morrison?
Aye.
Senator
Wessler?
Aye. Vice Chair
Cruz? Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. Senate Bill 989 has the majority and is on its way to the Senate. Let's let Senator Verger carry that. She should know what's going on by now with this bill, with all these changes.
We would hope so. She's a sponsor.
She
wants to carry it.
Okay, good. Yeah, I knew she'd been kept in the loop about what we were doing to her bill.
That was fantastic.
Good. Okay, now we're going to go to open a work session on Senate Bill 621. Where is Senator Metzger, however? I need Senator Metzger in the room. Yeah, I think we will.
Madam Chair, did you want me to speak to Senate Bill 621?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 621 applies teacher administrator licensing statutes to charter schools. It exempts existing charter schools and removes the requirement for charter schools to offer online courses to have at least 50% of their students reside in the charter school district. It requires at least 80% of charter school students residing in the district in which the charter school is located. It limits the number of students enrolled in charter schools to 10% of the total number enrolled in all public schools in that district. It declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007. We have four sets of amendments before us, Madam Chair.
Oh, good grief.
What's your pleasure?
What is my pleasure? I'm not sure. Let's see. Can you tell us what these amendments do? This one I didn't have a chance to.
Let me start with the dash threes put forward by Senator Cruz, if I may.
Okay.
The dash threes replace the measure, apply teacher standards and practices commission standards of fitness and the power to discipline or suspend to registered charter school teachers. It applies the additional teacher registration standards prospectively, declares an emergency, and would take effect July 1st, 2007. And possibly the dash fours?
Yeah, I don't know where the dash ones came from.
We've had those for a bit. The dash ones and the dash twos have been in front of the committee before. The dash threes and dash fours are new.
Okay, so the dash one and the dash two we're not going to talk about today. So the dash fours are?
The dash fours replace the measure and raise the charter school teaching administrative licensing requirements from 50% to 65%. This requirement would apply to new charter schools and to existing charter schools when they renew their charter. It also declares an emergency and would take effect July 1st, 2007.
Okay. My question is, and we may have to get Ms. Hunt back here, the dash three, Senator Cruz, is meant to address the issue that we talked about, that Ms. Chamberlain raised, about a jurisdiction over unlicensed teachers, correct? So that we can get background checks and things like that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, to the best of my understanding, it's to a large degree just taking current practice and putting it in statute. And Madam Chair, may I speak to why I removed the percentage
of teacher licensure?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Madam Chair, part of the reason was, and I know we had testimony on the state average, but I just want to give you a kind of a sense of if we go above the 50% that is currently in statute, the charter schools that would be impacted, and they would include LEP High, which is a high-risk school in Portland, Armadillo Technical Institute, which is a high-risk rural school in Jackson County, a Native American high school or school on the Umatilla Reservation, the Howard Street Charter School, which is a non-traditional middle school in Salem, Four Rivers Community School, which is Hispanic and low-income students in rural Ontario, Trillium Charter School, non-traditional students in North Portland, Sheridan Japanese School, which is for rural students in Sheridan, Village School, which is elementary and middle school students in Eugene, Bethany Charter School, which is for rural students in Silverton, Cascade Heights, and at-risk students in Clackamas area, Self Enhancement Inc. Academy, which is an African-American middle school students in North Portland, Riddle Education Center, which is rural students in Riddle, which is in my district, and Ballstrom Community School for students with EIPs in rural Amity. So those schools would all be negatively affected by the change in the percentage, and I think it's a consequence that I'm not willing to put on these schools.
Okay. Any comments from the committee? Can I see your list, because I can't find mine. Thank you. I'd like Ms. Wimmer Whalen and Ms. Hikas to come forward, please. Okay, I know you gave it to me, and I can't seem to locate it in this massive file. So, Ms. Hikas, how many charter schools are there in the state?
There are 69 charter schools currently.
69. Okay. And on this list, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 13. 6, 7, 13.
About 20% of the schools.
20% of these schools. What would they have to do to meet this new requirement of 65%? I mean, it's pretty limited. Let's take the first one. LEP High has 7 teachers. 3 are licensed. 1 administrator who is licensed, if I understand that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have to add one more licensed teacher to meet that 65%, don't you think?
Well, if they wanted to add a licensed teacher, they would have to fire a non-licensed teacher, or the non-licensed teacher would have to get licensed.
That
our concern is that the teachers would have to spend their time getting a license or finding a new job instead of educating the students in their schools.
Okay. That's an interesting comment. So it doesn't look to me like some of these are 50%, 60%. Here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of those are at 50%. One's at 56. Two are at 56. One's at 57. One's at 58. One is 60. And 2 are at 62.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like a great deal of schools who are having a problem meeting the 65%.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, our concern is that our concerns are many. There hasn't been any data presented that there are problems that increasing the licensure would solve, or that there would be benefits to increasing the licensure. I would also like to draw your attention to page 2 of my written testimony, which outlines the qualifications that charter school teachers must meet in order to register with TSPC. People can't just walk in off the street and get registration. They have to have bachelor's degrees. They have to prove subject matter competency by passing the same tests that licensed teachers do, et cetera, et cetera. So the registration, the registered staff are subject to the highly qualified criteria, No Child Left Behind, as interpreted by the state of Oregon. And this does provide the same quality assurance, I would contend, as TSPC licensure.
Okay. Ms. Wimmer Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For your record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. And after our last visit with the committee about this bill, some of the testimony by my members that issued concerns with respect to qualifications, particularly with special education students, was characterized as anecdotal. So I did ask our members if they could find out more information about specific examples. And I did hear from the two people, Ms. Steele and Mr. Duchin, who testified before you in the first hearing, and they had asked some of their special education teachers who work with the registered teachers in the charter schools about this issue, and they wrote, "It's much more difficult to explain the entire IEP process, and it's very time-consuming for both the certified specialist and the non-licensed teacher. There were also blocks in terms of philosophy, which made communication difficult. Licensed teachers use a similar language and understand a variety of interventions. The certified specialists had to spend a significant amount of time teaching about modifications and accommodations, new interventions, etc. Many of the non-licensed teachers at the two charter schools this one respondent worked for 2 years were not available to meet, did not include me in their parent communications, and did not seem interested in the support I could provide them as a specialist. So their biggest block was the inability to effectively communicate with respect to those special education students. They also said that other teachers who were kind of buried in IEPs right now didn't have the opportunity to respond in writing, but did also share these concerns.
Okay. Any questions of the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The ultimate test quality is the outcome of the students. Do we have any evidence that suggests that if you, by statute, raise this from 50 to 65, that the quality outcome will be different, or that the outcome that we presently have is deficient, and that this is a remedy to increase the quality?
Are you asking that?
It's just an open question.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. and Senator Morris, there have been a number of studies, and some of them have been national, and I would characterize some of it as mixed, but there have been any number of studies on the difference between a teacher who is qualified and trained and licensed and certified to teach as opposed to those who are not. And with respect to particularly, as we have testified, the issue of special education students getting served appropriately, I think that may be an emerging issue that is just starting to bubble up to the surface, but there certainly have been studies about students in terms of test scores compared to the public school system and so on. And finally, we believe that the proper training and licensure of teachers obviously is something that the state feels strongly enough about that is required for the traditional school program. And so I think that the body of evidence that led to that conclusion and that law would certainly support that.
Madam Chair, if I could also address that question.
You can.
There are a number, many dueling studies at the national level in terms of charter school efficacy overall. And we would, again, for the record, say that in Oregon, charter school test scores are on par with traditional school test scores. The annual ODE surveys indicate annually the high levels of satisfaction of parents, students, teachers. So we don't believe that there are any deficiencies in charter schools that could be addressed by increasing licensure. And furthermore, we're concerned that an increase this year would just pave the way for further increases in subsequent years. And we're concerned about that because the flexibility that the staffing provides charter schools right now is critical to the charter schools keeping the commitments that they make in their contracts with their districts.
Well, Ms. Hikas, I think that last comment is a fear and alarm that isn't necessary. I mean, we started out with 100% licensure in this bill, and you saw how far that got in this committee. We're simply asking to increase it by 15% to try to bump that up. You gave testimony that it didn't impact all that many schools, and well, we finally got the list from you once I changed the number on the bill, but your original testimony said 82% of Oregon's charter school teachers have TSPC licenses, and 83% are highly qualified, and the administrator licensure is 60%. So Then when I pressed you on it, you said, well, that was only a snapshot in time. So then I get this chart. I don't think 65% is too much to ask. I don't think that that means that it's going to go up. Clearly, we aren't getting there on this bill, this session, and you see how difficult it's been for us to motivate around that. Even the 80% rule was clearly not supported by this committee, and the collective bargaining issues were not supported by this committee, and that's why you see a simple little amendment to just increase the licensure to 65%, and it only impacts 20% of your charter schools, half of which are so close to meeting that now, I don't think it's going to be an impact. So, Cruz? Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, I respectfully disagree with you. And
I thought you might.
You thought I might? Okay. And we have had this conversation.
We have.
Yes. And first, let me say, Madam Chair, that your willingness all session long to accommodate members of this committee and their concerns has been exemplary, and I truly do appreciate that.
Thank you.
However, in this particular case, I remember very well the Charter School War of 1999.
Yes, and I was here.
Yes, I know you were. And as it was, well, fortunately for Senator Morris, he was not. But anyway,
the rest of us.
The rest of us were all here, and I remember the vehement opposition we had even to the concept by some members of this body and some entities, and the 50% was arrived at quite honestly. Some of us thought it should be lower. And some thought it should be higher, but it was an agreement that was arrived at over virtually a session-long debate on the issue. And at this point, Madam Chair, I have not been presented enough or any evidence that proves to me that the current percentage is causing any real problems. I think charter schools are working the way they should. You know, a lot of the expansion in charters have been in special needs students. I know we've got a school in Roseburg, Phoenix School, that deals with problem kids, and I approached the head of that school in '99 and said, you ought to consider this. And it was attractive to him, but he was a bit tentative about moving there, not knowing what the state ultimately was going to do. Eventually, they did go charter, and I think it's been very helpful to him. I guess I just don't want us starting down the pathway of tweaking with a concept and an alternative that I think is starting to show very good fruit.
Okay, thank you, Senator Cruz, and thank you for your comments. Your last comment about a lot of expansion in these schools has been with special needs hits on the point that Ms. Wimmer Whalen just
Madam Chair, not special ed, kids with problems. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily special ed children. They're just their disciplinary problems and things like that is where a lot of it, you know, they just don't fit in for various reasons. So I misspoke just a bit there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other comments? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate everyone's work on this. I would share the Chair's view. I do believe that maintaining flexibility is important, which is why this bill has gone for a while to get to this point. You know, I push back on this because I do believe that part of the whole charter school concept is to allow flexibility and to get other people involved. On the other hand, I do strongly support the values of that come with licensure and by TSPC for other reasons, and because it provides classroom experience that even technical expertise can be benefited from with that type of licensure. And as we discussed this legislation, and as the Chair noted, when we started out with this piece of legislation in your testimony, which is very good, regarding the 80-plus percent, 82% that are licensed. And that's where I think the three quarters came from, is that, okay, we want to maintain flexibility, but there's also been an understanding within the charter community that there are some values, because these people have gravitated. Maybe they don't want to be in the quote, traditional public school, but they still want to be in a public setting. And that's where we then, I think in round two, heard that, well, when we put the administrators together, it goes down to like 73%. And so the 65% really reflected that. And I know we got new things today, but I think there is a point where you try to be responsive to this and move forward on it. I think that this doesn't seriously impact I think the personnel at these schools, and again, this is upon reauthorization of their charter when that takes place. It meets both of the comments, you know, that you made in the initial, you know, why we went down to 75, and then when you said, well, it's only 70 some if you put them combined, now we went down to 65, so it still met that threshold. And I just think that there is tremendous value in having teacher licensure. I agree with you. I don't think everyone should be required. I think there is benefit that people can glean from people within the school system that have that. I think the 65%, I think, meets that goal. I think it does raise a standard bar a little bit higher. I think that's a positive step as the charter movement matures. I think that's also reflected in the numbers that we currently have. And yet, I think it also meets the need that I think you did articulate very well, that we want to still maintain flexibility. I think this provides that flexibility, and I would be supportive of that. And a lot of it is because of your original testimony and the follow-up testimony that where I fell down on that 65% number.
Thank you. Senator Morse?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Charter schools serve at the pleasure of school boards, those districts. Have we heard from COSA or OSBA with respect to problems that would be driving sufficiently to cause us to amend the 50%?
Yeah, they never signed up to testify, and we're in work session.
Well, I think it's a valid issue. My concern is, if we're going to change the percentage, there should be some reason other than just theory or anecdotal or studies that specific to Oregon. We have problems that have emerged through the school districts that say we need to change this. And that's where I would come from, Madam Chair, is if there's information that actually says
this. Well, I think Ms. Wimmer Whalen shared some of that with us here and in the previous testimony we had.
I must have. Well, specific is what I'm looking for, not okay. Studies.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, ladies. We are in work session. Senator Cruz, the two amendments do not conflict with one another, is my understanding. Your dash 3 does not conflict with my dash 4.
Okay, they aren't inclusive? I guess not. No.
No.
Okay.
So the dash 3 is something we all agree on, I think. So you want to offer that one up first?
Sure, Madam Chair. I move the dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 621.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 621. And thank you for getting that amendment done, by the way. Any other comments? Okay, that one is approved. And
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move the dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 621.
Senator Metzger moves the dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 621. And is there further discussion than what we've already had?
No, I don't know what the point would be at this point. So.
Okay, good. Because we have three more bills we want to punch out. And we're going until 10:15 for those of you out there.
You're going to take roll call, or should we just...
Oh, no, I'll take roll call.
Okay.
I'll take roll call. So, okay, so we have now the dash 4. Would you take the roll on the dash 4?
Aye.
Aye, yeah.
No.
Senator Westland?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Okay. Aye. The dash 4 is approved. Senator Metzger, why don't you move this bill now?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 621 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger moves Senate Bill 621 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Anything further that we've not already said? I appreciate the concerns of our colleagues. Please take the roll.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
No.
Senator Weston?
Aye.
Vice
Chair
Hughes?
No.
Chair Walker?
Aye. Senate Bill 621 passes. I will carry that, and I'm sorry we've not come to agreement with our colleagues, but sometimes we just share differences of opinion. All right. Thank you all for your testimony. We will close the work session on 621. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 800 since Senator Whitson is here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 800 requires school districts and education service districts to make annual full financial reports to the public, withhold state school fund allocations from districts that fail to disclose the report upon petition or request, allow school districts or ESDs residents to initiate an independently funded audit of school district or education service district expenditures. We have dash 1 and dash 2s in front of us. Shall I speak to either or both?
Which one are we working with?
I'm going to say dash 2. The dash 2 replace the measure, require the school district board audits to include a review of internal controls, requires the audit report to include an opinion on the appropriateness of the internal report controls, requires the school district board to identify deficiencies disclosed in the audit report that will be addressed and to issue a resolution with corrective measures, requires the Secretary of State and the Department of Education after receipt of the resolution. The report has to be filed with the Secretary and the Department within 60 days. That's the change between the dash ones and the dash twos.
Okay.
There's a little bit more.
Yeah, go ahead.
It allows the Secretary and the Department to certify to the Superintendent of Public Instruction the school district board's failure to take adequate action to correct deficiencies in two successive audits. Should that happen, it requires the Superintendent to withhold 10% of the state school fund.
So, Madam Chair, we're looking at the dash twos.
I don't think so. We're not withholding money from the state school fund.
Senator Whitsitt's here to speak to
Senator Whitsitt, you want to come up, please? I didn't think that was part of the deal. And Mr. Bennett.
For the record, I'm Doug Whitsitt, represent Senate District 28. Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning. Okay. So are we working with the dash 2 or the dash 1?
In my understanding, the dash 2 is the only difference between the dash 2 and the dash 1 is that the dash 2 allows 60 days for the school board to respond as opposed to 30 days in the dash 1. And that was because some of the smaller school boards don't meet every 30 days. And, for instance, in North Lake County, they might be in harvest season.
Okay.
Or branding or whatever. So that was the reason for extending that. Otherwise, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck, those are identical.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Bennett?
Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We had a meeting with Senator Whitsitt. It was candid and wide-ranging, and myself and Mr. Green from the School Boards Association, the outcome was the dash ones. Those were run by the Oregon Association of School Business Managers, who made the suggestion to change that to 60 days in order to meet the requirements, the requirements in a timely manner with school boards that don't meet every 30 days. We're in agreement with the change. Madam Chair, I know it is always eye-catching to see state school funds being held back. It is such a rare occurrence. What that is just it's the leverage that causes sort of the ultimate punishment for not responding to any requirement that you placed on them in the in the, I believe it's the Division 22 rules, if I recall correctly. But in this case, I think what you've got here, frankly, is a real strengthening of our auditing practices at the local level. This just mirrors what cities and counties do. Okay. School districts actually weren't subject to the requirement that they respond to the management letters in the audit. This just says you'll respond and by resolution describe the corrections you'll make. We have regularly argued and regarding auditing bills by the Secretary of State and everyone else that wants to audit school districts that we've got this great local system. And I think in the process of talking with Senator Whitsitt, we realized great system, but we're not completing the process. And this will really allow us to complete the process and I think have a very defensible local auditing system. So we're pleased with this bill. It actually, I think, would be part of any package of accountability. This probably, if we'd seen this earlier, may well have brought it to you as part of an accountability package. It's quite good.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you all sat down to work it out, Senator Cruz.
One motion.
Yeah, I'll take one.
I move that, Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 800.
Senator Cruz moves the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 800. Any discussion? Okay. No objection. That is approved.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 800 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 800 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Good job, Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do want to compliment Jim and Chuck on the effort they put into this. They were great to work with. They drafted the amendments, and I appreciate their efforts.
Sure. They're always eager to come to the table. Ms. Gravel, take the roll, please.
Senator Metzger?
Excuse.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Vice Chair, please.
Aye.
You're welcome.
Aye. Senate Bill 800 passes, and Senator Whitsitt will carry it. Okay, thank you. We'll move right along. Open a work session on Senate Bill 753.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill... Bill 753 requires all executive department agencies and officers to cooperate with the ombudsman established by law or by other state agency or officer. It refers disputes related to ombudsman's request for information to the attorney general. We have a -2 amendment in front of us that I will speak to.
Okay.
The -2 requires public bodies to cooperate with and promptly provide information to ombudsman's established by law or designated by the governor. It requires persons contacting with public bodies to cooperate with and promptly provide information to ombudsmen investigating matters related to the contract. It requires the agency or officer of the executive department to consult with the attorney general regarding legal disputes related to ombudsman's request for information. It provides for confidentiality of information provided to ombudsman and option to decline the request for inspection of public records.
Okay. Remember, colleagues, we all love this bill.
Except for? Except for the part where it spoke to established by law or designated by another state agency or officer, and I think that was what the -2 amendment corrected.
You are exactly right, my astute vice chair. Okay, I'll take a motion then.
Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 753.
Senator Cruz moves the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 753. Any further discussion? Okay. Without objection, those are approved.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 753 as amended to the floor of the Senate with due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 753 to the floor of the Senate as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Great work by another colleague. Take the roll, please.
Senator Metzger? Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 753 passes. It will go to the floor, and Senator Morissette will carry it. Aren't you guys lucky today?
We are.
You're not getting much work? Okay, we'll close the work session on 753, open a work session on Senate Bill 755, our final bill of the day.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 755 specifies a quorum for pilot education service district boards. It allows a pilot education service district board member to be recalled provides for staggered termination of service for board members, extends the legislative reporting requirement, allows an appointed board member to promote or oppose candidates or political measures in the same manner as elected board members until 2012, declares an emergency and take effect upon passage. We have a dash 2 amendment before us that removes the provisions in the bill related to the quorum of the board and recalling a board member.
Okay, Senator Cruz, you worked on this work group.
Yes, I did. Well, it's really kind of hard to call it a work group, but
well, you
we had conversations.
Okay.
And in the course of the conversations, Madam Chair, and as I communicated with you, I was under the impression that some of the components of the bill are unnecessary. The quorum component at this point is no longer necessary. I wasn't sure that I necessarily wanted to throw the recall thing in there at this point in time because, I mean, these are all issues we will address again next session. The free speech thing, I think, is important that they be allowed to opine in public. So what it came down to for me, Madam Chair, was the staggering of the terms of election. And I know that Ozzy said that the association did not want to go there. I was, at that point in time, told that the three pilot ESDs wanted that. And it was my opinion that... because these are the three that stepped out in front to take on this challenge, that if they wanted it, that we should give it to them. What I have discovered since then in correspondence is that there's only one of the ESDs that really wants this, and I really... I'm somewhat conflicted that the other two really, at this point, from what I have been told, or what has been communicated to me, are okay with status quo. So, you know, and also with the full understanding that, assuming that the two of us are back here next session in the same positions we are this session, mm-hmm. which is a fairly... I think we can make that assumption on the front end, that these are issues we are going to be dealing with. So I just offer this up. What the amendment did was basically bifurcate the terms of office in the scope that we can do it, and one of the suggestions we had was to go out and make them 010 and 012, which we cannot do constitutionally because these are legislatively created boards, and legislative created boards have a 4-year term maximum. So that's kind of the status. And
we've got about 1 minute to finish this up because Senator Metzger needs to do something before we leave. So do you want to go through with it? I mean, after all that, only one of the three wants to stagger the terms. I don't see that it impacts the other two distinctly.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think the real impact, I mean, I think it's a matter of them wanting some certainty in term of office. And I guess an alternative would be to retake up the agenda, the issue potentially in February as well. So...
Well, that February calendar is suddenly growing. I don't think we want to wait that long.
Well, I mean...
Cruz, what do you want to do?
What do you want to do?
I say...
What do you guys both want to do?
I say we run with the dash 2. And if they want to back it out in the House, they can talk about it. But we don't really have any more.
Well, Madam Chair, that's probably a good point. The dash 2 makes the bill better than the current bill. Rather than, and if we do nothing, the issue dies, and so it would give them another month or so to deal with it. So,
and I appreciated the comments of Senator Morse and all of the committee members on this issue. So I'd like to run the dash 2.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll move the dash 2 to Senate Bill 755.
Thank you. Senator Cruz runs the proposes that we pass the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 755, that we adopt them.
Any further comments? Okay, they're adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 755 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 755 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further comments? None. Call the roll, please.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Wessler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 755 has received the constitutional majority to pass. It's on its way to the Senate. Senator Cruz, you're carrying it.
Okay.
Okay, hang on 1 second. We need Senator Metzger would like to vote on Senate Bill 800.
Madam Chair, I move the rule seat be suspended to allow Senator.
Oh, hang on. Close the work session on Senate Bill.
Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended to allow Senator Metzger to vote on Senate Bill 800.
Senator Cruz moves that the rules be suspended to allow Senator Metzger to vote on Senate Bill 800. Any objection? Hearing none. The rules are suspended. Senator Metzger, how do you vote?
Aye.
Senator Metzger votes aye. Okay. Did you want to vote on anything else that you missed?
I think that's what I missed.
Okay, great.
Did you want to vote twice on anything?
We'll let you do it today. All right. We're adjourned. Thank you. Wow.